Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting entrepreneurs, authors, and speakers who have wonderful stories to share and who are excited to freely share their business wisdoms, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I'm really excited. I'm speaking with inspirational survivor, speaker, and author Dave Sanderson. Now, y'all remember this story. When U.S. Airways Flight 1549, or the Miracle on the Hudson, ditched into the Hudson River on January 15, 2009, we were all glued to our television. This was one of those events where you couldn't walk away. You had to watch it. You had to know what was going on. Dave Sanderson was on that plane, and he knew that he was exactly where he was supposed to be. The last passenger off the back of the plane on that fateful day, he was largely responsible for the well-being and safety of others, risking his own life in frigid water to help other passengers off the plane. And despite the hazards to himself, Dave thought only of helping others and emerged from the wreckage with a mission to encourage others to do the right thing. Today, he will briefly share the story of Flight 1549, revealing the inner strength it took to make it through that really terrible day, and how teamwork, leadership, and state management can help overcome any obstacle. Then we are going to dive into what he calls the 12 pillars. These are the 12 resources that he used during that plane crash and in his career to not only survive, but to be a top contributor in his personal philanthropy in addition to the companies that he served. Now be sure to check out the show notes for some video links that will help you understand more of his story. It's a terrific story. We actually did a pre-interview a week or so ago. We talked for probably an hour and a half. It was one of the most fascinating chats that I've had in a very long time, and I really wish we had recorded it. But I really want him to talk about the 12 resources. So there are resources where you can find a lot more about what happened that day and a lot more about Dave. I encourage you to go to his website. You can see more videos on his speaker page at davesandersonspeaks.com. And please do join us in the chat room. We're broadcasting live, and you will also be able to download the show on demand or listen to it in iTunes. Dave, good morning. I am so excited to have you here.
Well, good morning, Denise. I'm truly excited to be back with you today after our talk last week. Thank you for having me.
I could not have you. That was not even an option. So, I mean, tell people, if you don't mind, tell people, you know, kind of a short version of what happened. I mean, we all watched it. We saw what was going on, but we don't know it from your perspective. And then if we really need to go into those 12 pillars, because I think that is critical information for people to have.
Well, I'm excited not only to share a little bit about what happened that day, but what I really am passionate about these 12 resources, ensuring those strategies and lessons that I and others used that day to not only survive what happened, but hopefully help people when they have what I call their own personal plane crash. So I'll take a quick moment to sort of share what happened from the inside the plane perspective. First, I wasn't supposed to be on the plane. I was scheduled on the 5 o'clock flight, but I was in Brooklyn that day and my job is a sales manager, and we got done early. We started our day about 5 a.m., so we got done about 10 a.m. So that's how I got on the plane. And candidly, I gave up a first class seat at 5 o'clock to get on a coach seat at, on U.S. Airways Flight 1549. So I wasn't supposed to be on that plane, but nothing extraordinary about it. It was a typical day, business day. It was snowing that day in New York, but it's the middle of the winter, no big deal. And when I got back to my seat, I went to seat 15A. I just did what I always did and what everybody usually does is start reading and not paying attention to the flight attendant, which was a big mistake. I think that's one of the biggest lessons out of this is paying attention and awareness. But after about 60 seconds plus, after we took off, when I heard an explosion, and Canley, it didn't startle me too much, but because I flew so much. But you know, as we turned out a little bit later, we knew that something pretty tragic happened that day with the simultaneous bird strikes on both sides of the plane. And fortunately for all of us, we had a captain who had over 40 years of experience and 20,000 hours, but more importantly, was a fighter jet pilot in Vietnam. And as important, a first officer also had 20,000 hours. So we had a lot of experience up in the front of the plane to hopefully maintain their focus. And that's one of the things we'll talk about in a little while, about the power of focus. But as he glided that plane over the George Washington Bridge, because he was headed straight for the bridge, he made his famous call about brace for impact. And that's when I knew it was something potentially going to happen. It wasn't probably going to turn out very well for me and anybody else. But after he crossed that bridge, he crashed into the river about 60-plus seconds later. And fortunately for all of us, he hit it perfectly, because if he would have hit it just 1 degree either way, if you could imagine toppling a plane, tipping over tip by tip into Manhattan during rush hour, or Hoboken, New Jersey during rush hour, that could have been a bigger tragedy than anybody would ever imagine. But he hit it perfectly. But that was only half of it. Once we're down, now we got to get out, because the plane is now sinking in the Hudson River. So when it was my turn to get out, my game plan, Denise Canley, was get to the aisle, get up, and get out. But when I got to the aisle to make my time to go out, I heard my mother speak to me, and she passed away in 1997. But she said, "If you do the right thing, God will take care of you." And at that point, I had to make a choice: what was the right thing for me? And the right thing for me was you take care of other people first. That's how I grew up, and so that's how I became the last passenger off the plane, to make sure we got everybody out of the plane first. Because Canley, I wasn't injured, and I felt that I could handle myself. So I got when I was my turn to get off the plane, I made my way up about waist deep level in the water, and I went out the right side in 10F. And as soon as I started making my way out, I couldn't get out of the plane, because the wing, if you notice, remember that picture, the famous picture that was out there of people standing on the wing and the lifeboat on the right side of the plane were already filled up. So it took me about 6+ minutes to get off the plane. I was waist deep in the 36 degree water for about 6+ minutes. But that was an amazing time, because a lot of things happened. And one of the things that happened, that there was a lady on the wing with a baby, and she had another child, a 3-year-old on lifeboat, but she was by herself, and she was scared. So she wasn't moving, though, and that was the thing about it. She wasn't moving, and no one was moving around her on that wing to get off the wing for me to get out. So I yelled at her, and fortunately for me, she startled her enough that she heard me and looked at me, and all of a sudden she gave her baby up to another lady and got on a lifeboat, and all of a sudden people started walking down the wing. And that's how I think things started happening, at least for me. Once she moved, because everybody then could move, and I could start thinking of my strategy to get out. But I had to actually swim because the plane was going down pretty quick, and a boat hit the front of the plane. So I once that happened, and I felt water starting to slosh, I felt the plane was going down like that boat did in Titanic. When it tipped up, it sucked everything down in the plane, and right. And I said, "Man, do not be sucked down a plane." And that's when I made the decision: it's time for me to go. And that's how I swam to get off the plane that day to the closest ferry that I could find, which was the end of the wing. And that's how I got off the plane. But then the next phase is, you know, I've got to start recovery. And Canley, I was so cold, I couldn't even think. But fortunately for me, the folks in not only the triage center took great care of me, and the Red Cross did a tremendous job in supporting me at the triage center. And the hospital are my heroes. My nurse Bautista is my angel at the hospital, because she stayed with me the entire time. And I had hypothermia. My temperature was 94, and Canley, it took about 5 hours to basically get my body back to where I could at least start functioning again. But there's a lot of other things that happened through that time frame, which I speak about when I'm on stage and share, because there's a lot of lessons around that. But I got home the next day, and I flew back, and fortunately for me, my family was there, and U.S. Air was there to greet me, but also the CEO of the American Red Cross was there with my family, which was the most important thing that happened, because someone was taking care of my family while I was trying to get squared away. So there was a lot of miracles that happened that day, and that's why I'm so blessed to be able to not only share the experience from that day, but all these resources that I used and others used, and lessons and strategies that, because everybody in life, Denise, has what I call their own personal plane crash, whether it's cancer, whether it's a car crash, a fire, whatever it may be. And there's resources that you can use to get through them. And that's why I'm really passionate about sharing, because I think everybody can relate, not to a plane crash, but having something tragic go on in their lives.
I watched the video of you when you were talking about the Red Cross, and I know you do a lot of work with the Red Cross. And there was also a great video on your speaker page from Tony Robbins, who, you know, of course, is this great life coach, and he's quite famous, and he's a very good friend of yours. I admit, I watched those, and I got a little teary. I was like, really, Denise? You've already heard this story, but I got a little teared up both times. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's a wonderful thing that everybody came out of that alive. I mean, that was one of those stories where you're like, oh, my God. There really are miracles out there.
Yeah, I think what happened that day was a metaphor for there is hope. When 2009 wasn't a real positive year in the economy, there's a lot of things happening, a lot of negativity in the country and the world, and all of a sudden you have a captain and 154 of the people to do something that had never been done before. In the biggest stage in the world, in New York City, during the rush hour period, where you have millions of people that all of a sudden can witness this. And I think that was one of the things that I think people really maybe don't understand is this was a tremendous metaphor for if you have faith, if you have teamwork, if you have these things, you know, leaderships, people stepping up, then good things can happen and still will happen. But you have to pull it all together. You have to check egos at the door. There's so many things. So that's that day was a day which will, of course, live with me the rest of my life. But every time I go to a new city and speak or talk to somebody, they always bring up where they were at. And I'm shocked. I'm overwhelmed when that happens.
Oh, I know where I was. I was home. My office is in my home. And I actually had cable still at that time. I don't have cable TV any longer. I really, it's just a personal rant, but I don't watch enough TV to pay want to pay that enormous bill. But I also don't like the crap that comes into my house, to be honest with you.
I understand.
But, you know, I had, I think, Fox News going, or I had some kind of news program, and I heard that, man, I tore out of my office like crazy, and I spent the rest of the day just, it was almost like 9/11. I could not go away from it. I had to watch it.
Well,
but
thank you for being there to watch it.
Trust me, I was there. I was absolutely glued to the TV, and I kept saying, oh, my God, they're all alive. Oh, my God. I mean, it was an amazing, amazing thing to watch.
Yep.
Well, I'm so glad you shared your story with us, because I think it's important that people understand that. What I really want to know, oh, and by the way, there are movies being made about this, are there not?
There are. There's my story was actually featured in a movie that was premiered in Philadelphia back in July called Be Who You Are, and then in January, another movie that I'm actually in called Miracles on the Hudson will be premiered in New York City, which a lot of us, I think like 12, 13, 14 of us are in that and reenacting what happened. But the big one is when Clint Eastwood is announced last month, well, in June, that he was producing a movie of Captain Sullenberger's story and life, and new information comes out about that every week or so. So I'm honored that... you know, what happened that day. And I think one of the great things about Clint Eastwood doing this is he tells a hero story tremendously well. And Sullenberger is a hero. And to be able to share it in a way that people will understand about the power of what he, not only he did, but just being humble and being focused and being the things that he is, I think will resonate tremendously well. And hopefully I'll just have a chance to go to the premiere. That's what I tell people. I just want to go to the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just be excited.
Well, you know, I don't go to theaters. I really don't enjoy them. I don't like to listen to people yakking on their cell phones. I don't enjoy theaters. This is one movie I'm going to actually go into a theater to watch. It's with Tom Hanks, isn't it?
Tom Hanks, and he's starting to cast people now, and there's another one this week. So I just, you know, Tom Hanks, that's pretty big field there with Clint Eastwood and Tom Hanks. You can't get much bigger than that.
No, I'm a huge Clint Eastwood fan, huge. Okay,
yep.
So let's talk. We're getting off track.
Yeah.
It's so easy to talk with you. It just happens that way. And I'm a little bit raspy today, so forgive me if my voice just kind of goes. Let's talk about the 12 pillars. I have to assume, Dave, that a lot of these were already in play in your life, and maybe some of them were brand new. Can you kind of define those? Were they always, or did you add some? How did that work out?
Thanks for asking. So how this really sort of came about in the mindset was, yes, I think I've always had these. I not only with all the education I've had, but the training I've had, and of course being with Tony Robbins for over 10 years and traveling with him and being around him, just by assimilation, you get a lot of the strategies and these resources and get to put them in play. But what happened was about a year and a half ago, one of my assistants, Vicky, and I were talking. She goes, "You got to get this out on paper. You got it all in your head. You got to get it out." So we spent about 9 hours of audio taping, just everything that happened that day and all these things that occurred. And all of a sudden, we dissected. There were like 12 different sort of resources or strategies or skills, whatever you want to call them, that I employed, and then I shared with other people employed that day. Likewise, that all of a sudden became, this is something that people actually can use. So I think what happened was all this education and training that I had, not only myself, but with Tony and other people, that day, all of a sudden, I could put them in play and employ them. And that's the one thing that a lot of people I've realized over the years, Denise, is everybody's got these, but people don't use them. And why don't they use them? Because, they can not only help you in a potentially tragic situation, but I use these in sales and production, and that's how I became a top producer in pretty much every company I've ever been with, because I did things differently and I employed the skills that I learned instead of just learning them and not and shelving them. And I think that's the big difference. I employed the skills that I learned instead of just saying, I'm never going to use that, and all of a sudden I don't. All of a sudden I'm just one of many instead of standing out.
What are some of the skills?
Yep.
I think I know some of them, but I would love for you to kind of go down that list. And look, I agree with you, Dave. We all have skills that either we have to dig them out of mothballs and go, there you are, or we're very aware of them and we're utilizing them. And I would love for people to understand that you've got this whole skill set that if you're not tuning in and understanding where you can be of assistance to yourself and to other people, you're really missing the boat, so to speak. So go down that road for me if you would.
I will. I'd love to. So I'll start really talk about, I think, the biggest skill, which encompasses all these, is the skill set of resourcefulness. And that really didn't come to play for me until probably 1999. And I was actually with Tony Robbins. We were in Fiji together at an event. And I was with him, and we were sitting there talking. And I asked him, I said, what's going into the new millennium, what's going to be the thing that I need to focus on in my life to be able to be that person who can be a top producer and that kind of person? He goes, it's going to be the skill of resourcefulness. He goes, it's those people who think they have limited resources that use resourcefulness and all the resources they do have to get the outcome. He said, that will be the key skill going into the next millennium. So as I was thinking through that and I was looking at this, I'm like, some of these skills, like awareness, is like one of the top skills I talk about. And I talk about it while on the plane. I wasn't aware. I did exactly what I did every single time. And I don't think anybody on a plane really is aware because they don't pay attention. So I think the skill set of being aware of not only, what was going on, but the opportunity and the resources I did have. And I'll give an example. When we crashed into the river, the top of the seats broke. And all of a sudden you saw people getting on top of the seats, walking down the seats to get out of the wings and get out of the other exits. And people were being really resourceful and aware that all of a sudden they had another pathway. So it was a real great metaphor for me is when you think you only may have only one pathway out, which most people, including me, thought the aisle was the way out, all of a sudden you see there's multiple four or five different pathways to get out of the plane. And that's why you saw people so quickly on the wings. And so it's a great metaphor. So I talk about awareness and why am I here and having that what I call a pre-flight checklist where, even when you get on a plane, count the rows how many you are, away from an exit, or be aware of what the flight attendants say, or in business, pay attention to what people are saying and all of a sudden be able to dissect it. So awareness is like number one of the resources I normally use that day, but I think is key in business. Second is faith. And people will say faith from a spiritual perspective, and most definitely I think that was there. But I also talk about faith and think about faith as a resource, as faith in each other. When you have 100, and I use the example, 155 people who did not know each other or care about each other, pulled together, and they had to have faith in each other that they were going to do the right thing. Just like I give the example, you're driving down the road. How do you know when that person's coming, you're going down a two-lane highway, and that person's coming toward you, they're not going to veer over and hit you? You've got to have faith that they're going to do the right thing. And most, 9 times out of 10 or 99% of the time, they do. That's that 1% of the time they don't. So having faith not only from a spiritual perspective and a greater being, but faith in each other, you know, awakening to that purpose that, you know, that each one of us has, and be able to connect that. Third is, I talk about certainty. And, you know, it's a resource that, you know, like I mentioned, you know, earlier, when I got up and I got to the aisle, you know, and my mother started talking to me and I had to make that choice, I was certain that I could actually handle myself. And I think that was a distinguishing factor on that plane, and a great thing, great metaphor for business, because you look at people, the passenger makeup of that plane, and most of them were business people coming out of New York that afternoon. You had 90% of the people that were candidly business people like me who were certain in themselves. So if you have certainty like that in themselves, then that exudes certainty. And I'll give the example that you know, and I learned this from Tony years ago, and it is true. He says he always told me that the person in the room that had the most certainty is the one who's going to be stand out and be the leader, whoever that is. And you may not even know who that person may be, but the person that exudes certainty, that they slow down, they go from the heart, and they're ready to go and prepare, that person who now reveal themselves as a true leader, whether it's a aggressive leader or a passive leader. So certainty. You know, I talk about responsiveness. You know, we had to respond to what was going on at each moment on that plane, whether it was what the captain said, brace for impact, or when the flight attendant said, brace, 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 or when all of a sudden you heard people giving instructions on the plane. And I'll give you the example on the plane where there's a picture that of me basically holding on the lifeboat, hanging out the door waist deep in the water. And I show people, I say, you know, look at this picture. It's all the passengers that had to do that. And people had to respond to people. And not only respond on that plane, but then you had the first responders who were responsive that day to what we needed, and people who were on shore. So responsiveness was a tremendous, tremendous, you know, resource. And I call it sharing that flight plan in my aviation terms. Being responsive to the flight plan that you have, and being able to be compensate for sometimes stepping up and sometimes stepping back. Another one which I talk about in great detail and I'm very passionate about is called state management, or I say managing your mind through a crisis, because, you know, it's all about how you respond to a situation, whether it's in your personal life, whether it's in a tragedy, whether it's in business. And there's 3 ways that you can change the way you respond. It's through your physiology, which is the way you do it with your body movements, whether it's through vocal or your auditory, the way you talk to yourself, or the way you focus. And that day on the plane, we couldn't jump up and down and get ourselves physically in that state. We had to do it through either talking to ourselves, which a lot of people did, or as I share the story how Captain Sullenberger did it, by the way of power focus, where he had to focus on that outcome, which was a great metaphor. He had to focus on that outcome and basically get himself in the proper state, because he couldn't lose it, because once he lost it, everybody else would have lost it. And that's why he shares a story that's why he said what he said in the way he said it, because if he said any more, all of a sudden people may start questioning, and all of a sudden you have people responding in a different way. He had to be very succinct and give the direct command and that focus. So the way he managed his state, and everybody managed that state, the first responders managed that state, and if you get in a business meeting, you know, how's everybody in that room, how are they managing their state? So you have somebody who's in an unresourceful state, and you need to get them resourceful, and they need to change that through either their body, the way you talk to them, or the way they focus. The one I love to talk about is sensory acuity and the modalities. And what I mean by that is everybody's got the 5 primary senses, you know, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, gustatory, and olfactory. And on the plane that day,
I think we have 6, but a lot of people don't utilize that 6th one. But that's just
I'll leave you to the 6th one. I know of 5, and I talk about 5. I think that day on that plane where you had to not only go, you know, everybody's got a primary sense that they really rely on initially. And I'll give the example of my wife and myself, where we've been married for now 28 years, but it took me many years to realize that my wife is purely auditory. She loves to talk, and she loves to be able to communicate in a auditory manner, where I am a visual person. you show me something, and 15 seconds later, I got it, so let's move on. I don't need to have a 30-minute dissertation about what's going on. Just tell me, we got it going. And once I figure that out, that people communicate in different modalities, and now I can adapt and be resourceful enough to be able to change what modality I want to communicate in, whether I want to communicate in my modality or go to their modality, all of a sudden, that changed not only everything in my personal life, but in business. And when I would go into a business meeting, and I still do it today, I quickly understand how that person communicates by their language patterns, whether that they say, I hear something, or I see something, or I feel something. And as soon as I figure that out, now I'm communicating at their level. Now we were in sync, and we're in rapport. That happened that day on the plane, but how I communicated and other people's communicated on the plane. It's a great tool to use in not only communication, but the way to grow your business. I've already mentioned the power of focus. I think that's one of the biggest resources. Not only were used that day on the plane, but I use all the time. I was asked on an interview once if I could have one super skill to have, like a Superman or anybody like that. What superpower would I have? I said the power of to be able to focus in an instant. I think that if you can focus in, that's the power of a genius. They can focus in on something very quickly and get an outcome. And that's what Sullenberger had to do. That's what Skiles had to do. That's what I had to do. I had to focus on the outcome. And I tell folks one of the greatest examples is some of the people on that plane who are probably leaders in their business had to step back to let other people who had a better skill set do what they needed to do so they could focus in on the outcome, not focus in on their personal interest. And I think that was one of the key differentiating factors that day where people focused on the outcome, not on themselves. I also talk about the power of anticipation. It's the power of that, what I call the power of that flight plan. It's anticipating what the positive things and or negative things that could happen. So if you can anticipate, the power of anticipation now, especially in this economy, of way the economy is going and the way business is going, and anticipate what that person's moving. The one thing that Tony always told me when I was with him is one of the reasons he and I got along so well is I could anticipate his next move. And I had that power that I could understand what was important to him next. And I do that with pretty much everybody I'm around, whether it's my family or my business or my friends, is what do they need next? And all of a sudden I try to get in front of that. And all of a sudden, once I do that, I've got instant rapport. And now I'm looking out for them and not for me. And all of a sudden we're going down a pathway very quickly the right way. So the power of anticipation. In addition, the next one I talk about is risk assessment. Talking about, you have to assess what's going on at every moment. You have to understand to trust yourself and trust in your crew. So, if I focus on especially on a plane, what possible things could go wrong? And I do that every time on a plane. And the way I do that is, and one of the distinctions I've learned, Denise, over the last several years from talking to captains and pilots and crews, is that every plane is different. And, if you don't understand and don't pay attention and assess the risk and anticipate that risk, that all of a sudden you think a door, you have to lift it up and throw it out, it's 42 pounds. You may have a one that's on a hydraulic, and all of a sudden you pop it, and all of a sudden you got stuff breaking loose. So assessing everything and assessing everything that could potentially go right or wrong to be able to be more resourceful, I think, is a great, great skill, the resource that I used that day. And of course, you talk about persistence, and the most successful people in this world are the ones who are the most persistent. They don't give up. And that day, I'll give you an example. There was a lady, and she was an elderly lady in the back of the plane that kept yelling, just leave me here, just leave me here, go, go, go. And of course, no one was going to leave her there, but her mindset was that she was just going to give up. And that wasn't an option. I think everybody who on that plane, because I remember two people getting her. One was one of the flight crew, and one was a business person. They picked her up and basically carried her up in front of me as we got her out of the plane. And I think it's that focus of persistence. We're going to get the outcome. We may not get it the way we want it. We may not get it right now, but ultimately we will get it. And so the power of persistence, survival, focusing on what's important at the moment, critical. And the last two, which I talk about a lot, you've even mentioned before, is teamwork. And I think that was one of the key things that caused that outcome that day. And I'll give you the example that Captain Sullenberger gets tremendous, gets tremendous credit for getting that plane down. He used his skill sets of gliding and power of focus and his resources to get that plane down. But once the plane was down, Denise, it all of a sudden shifted to the team. because he couldn't get everybody out of that plane individually. Everybody had to work together on that plane that day. And I share that earlier, that picture I show when I speak about me hanging out the door, and I share with people when they ask, I say, just look at this picture. Look at it closely. There's one thing you will not see in this picture. You know, and there was no crew on the right side of the plane managing it. It was all the passengers who were managing the plane. The team all had to manage something that they had no experience to manage. Who manages from a passenger perspective and go through the training that all the crew does about how to handle an emergency? Because the one person who was supposed to be on the right was helping somebody else out of the plane, that lady we were talking about. So all of a sudden you have passengers on the plane that have to step up and work together as a team. And like I mentioned, sometimes leaders step up, sometimes leaders step back. But all of a sudden, people actually started taking control of the situation that persisted to get that outcome. It's a tremendous metaphor. I'd say 155 people who did not know each other, who did not care about each other, did something that had never been done before in 6 minutes. How does that happen? People had to pull together as a team. Yeah, and I talk about it as a metaphor to having the right passengers in the right seat. You know, that plane on that day had the right passengers in the right seat. Some people had to do what they had to do to get out of the plane. Some people had to help. Some people had to step back. Right passengers on the right seat. And that's a great metaphor for business, because I think a lot of businesses I speak to, Denise, have great people in the wrong places. And all of a sudden, they're not serving at the right level. They're not focused on the mission of that day or the mission of that company. And all of a sudden you have infighting, or you have people who are non-alignment, and you're not making the progress you need to make. I'm guilty of that myself. I've had that in the past, but I quickly now try to assess, do I have the right passengers on the right seats on the plane? And the last one, the number 12, is, of course, leadership. And, you know, we had leaders on that plane, not only Captain Sullenberger and Captain Skiles. We had other leaders on that plane. And I talk about, and now I have a workshop that I talk about. It's called Mission-Focused Leadership. Because over the last several years, I've been around some tremendous leaders in this world, starting from not only from Tony and people like that, from like General Norman Schwarzkopf and like Captain, of course, Captain Sullenberger. And I've got to meet a Supreme Court Justice. And you get to talk to these people and the leaders around the country and their mindset about how does one do this? How does one become a leader? And, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. But, you know, the one thing that's in common that I found, that's what I talk about. They use a lot of the resources I've talked about, but the one thing that they focus on is the mission. And I'll give you a quick story. I had the honor and privilege of escorting General Norman Schwarzkopf in 1999, and we were in Hawaii, and I had like 45 minutes with him to escort him. And I went and asked him a question, you know, and that was pretty daunting, asking a four-star general a question. I don't know if you've had that opportunity, but they command respect. And so I knew I wasn't supposed to talk to him much, but I had a question for him. I asked him, I said, can I ask you a question, sir? And he said, no one ever asks a general a question twice. And I'm like, whoa, I offended a general, right? But he said, go ahead. And I said, how did you win that war so quickly? I mean, you went into Iraq and Kuwait and got it out. How did you do that? And he said, are you just asking, or do you really want to know? And I think he gets asked so many questions, and I was like, I really like to know, sir. And so he told me, he said he had to get everybody aligned in the mission. He said he had every day someone coming to him with problems, such as women couldn't drive tanks in Saudi Arabia. They had to pray at this time every day. Women had to cover their heads in battle. He said he kept reminding his people, how does this contribute to the outcome and the mission of kicking Saddam out of Kuwait? He said, once I got people focused on that mission, everything started rolling. And now, if you look back at what he told me and what I've learned and read about that first Iraq war, now I can understand why he didn't go into Baghdad. It wasn't his mission. He had one specific mission that he focused everybody on and all of a sudden executed in a record time. And all of a sudden, I kept getting the same lessons from other leaders I talked to, business leaders, and like I said, Captain Sullenberger, Skiles, or Schwarzkopf, Supreme Court Justice. I hear the same thing, but they were all focused on their mission and get people focused on the mission. And that's us. Okay, there's the key. How do we do this, and how can we refocus resources on mission? That's why I now speak about and teach about mission-focused leadership. And those are the 12 resources, or I call pillars of resourcefulness, that I used that day and were not only employed that day, but I used in business to be successful. And I hope I try to teach and help everybody understand if when they get to that point, whether they're in a business time or personal time or their personal plane crash, to call on, remember one of some of these things, how other people have used them in the past. Because you mentioned this at the beginning, and I think you were exactly right, Denise. The fastest way to get any outcome, any result in life, is to model somebody who's received that. And if you do the exact same things that person does, you too will get the same outcome, whether that's financially, whether that's through your career, whether that's through your family. Find somebody who's a role model. And I had a mentor back in the early 90s. His name was Bill. He passed away last year. He owned 80 theaters in North Carolina. But you never know it because you wore a flannel shirt and drove a pickup truck. But Bill was one of the smartest people. He took me under his wing, and he taught me these life lessons. And I think if you can find somebody you can model who has achieved what you want to achieve, grasp for that person, take that person out to lunch, take that person, call that person, get with that person, because they can share with you distinctions. And we talk about compressing decades of their learning down to days to your execution. And I think that is the key, modeling somebody who's got it. And I'd love to talk about how to do that and teach how to do that. So that's the 12 resources, Denise.
We've got another 25 minutes if you've got time to share. And by the way, I have to ask you, you mentioned earlier that you have a workshop. Is that a live in-person workshop, or do you have something online that people can take?
Thank you. We will be recording it, but I do it live for organizations all over the country. And what's sort of it's amazing. People have approached me about coming into their companies and taking like their management teams and teaching them these skill sets. And I've done that all over the country. And I'm hopefully going to be able to share that in more detail out on the website and how people can actually have me come to do that, because I think, you know, I take 2 hours and I nail this thing down in 2 hours on these resources and combine them with mission focused leadership and give them tools. And I share some tools with them that I think a tool has to be simple. And I share a tool that I learned years ago that I employed, and all of a sudden it took me from being a good salesperson to being a top salesperson. And it was, you know, using at that point it was a mobile phone. Now it's my iPhone or Droid. And I show people this one little thing, and I did this with a couple football teams I spoke with earlier this year. I spoke to the Carolina Panthers and the James Madison University football teams. And I shared with them this one little tool because I said, you know, I talked about the mission and what the mission is. The mission for the James Madison Dukes is to win the national championship. The mission for the Panthers is to win the Super Bowl. And I would ask them a question. I said, what skill sets, what mindsets, what things do you have to do every single day? What kind of resources do you have to use to be able to be that person, to be able to contribute, to be able to get that outcome? And I have them write it down, and I show them a tool with their iPhone or Droid that they can use. And all of a sudden, every day, they're not only reminded, but it comes back. And once again, it starts compounding, right? You hear it once, okay, twice. You hear it 10, 15 straight days, and all of a sudden, it's ingrained in you. And that's how geniuses and people who get outcomes do it. They immerse themselves and to get that outcome. So I give them one little tool that I learned, that I employed, that all of a sudden took me from being a person who was 35 pounds overweight, making a few bucks in sales, doing okay, to a top salesperson in one of the largest sales organizations in the country, losing all that weight, and now hopefully at that point being a sales leader, which all of a sudden propelled me probably about 15 years later, this is about 1989, 1990, about 15 years later, 19 years later, to be able to be on the Miracle on the Hudson and hopefully perform in a way that helped other people survive and hopefully have a greater life for themselves and, more importantly, others. And I think that's one of the things that I was in a joyful state last year, 2 years ago now. I was invited to be on the Katie Couric Show. And in the show, where initially was about, you know, some of our stories, which was great because it was the 5th year anniversary. But it shifted. It shifted. I mean, before the day before, I didn't even know it shifted until I got there. And they prepped me before I got, you know, when I got there, to showed all these families that had all these children after the plane crash that would have never, ever had a family. These kids would have not even been born unless everybody did what they did that day and Captain Sullenberger, he did. And all of a sudden, you had like 12 families that were number one, at least had one child additional, and families that are growing, and multiple hundred, like 75 to 100 people on the stage. And I'm like, just think of this one thing, and all of a sudden these people have a life now. That's the power of pulling together all these things and resources. And that's why I was overwhelmed when I saw that.
I can imagine. So let's go back just a bit.
Yep.
You said that you, Vicky, I believe it was, that y'all recorded these things, and all of a sudden you were able to point out to yourself that you had these math skills, that you had these resources, but you didn't really know, or you hadn't, I guess, enumerated them or really even identified them as a lump, you know, as 12 skills until that time. And I find that very interesting. And I find it interesting because I haven't done it either. And guess what I'm going to be doing this weekend?
Yep.
It's like, well, Denise, you know,
record
where do
everything.
You find? You know, where do you have math skills? What do you do? I haven't done it. I mean, I know that there are a lot of things I'm very good at, but I've never really kind of picked it out of the lineup and go, there's your sweet spot. That's what you're great at. You know, you're okay over there. You can up your game. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I think, unless the plane crash happened, I knew that I probably had them, but that was my impetus, that threshold moment that I had to, all of a sudden it came together. And that's why I tell people, there's a moment in life when, you know, you're working or you're playing or with your family, whatever it is, everybody comes to that threshold moment in life. And to me, it happened to be in a big situation, a plane crash. But all of a sudden, it awakens you to what you really are in life. What's your purpose in life? And that's why everything shifted that day for me. And that's why now I'm an entrepreneur. I work for myself and have a few other people on my team. And I can now help other people because, you know, I think my creator trusted me to say, okay, he gave me a pathway. He said, okay, you know, you survived. You've got this. What are you going to do with it now? And I think everybody was given that question that day. What are you going to do with it now? And some people have done great things. Some people have said, you know, I don't want anything to do with it. And and one thing I learned, Denise, out of this is, you know, and I'll blame myself because I think everybody has done it. I was probably judgmental, pretty judgmental people. You know, why do they do this and why I was judging people. And all of a sudden, after the plane crash, I started realizing I can't judge people. I don't know what their backstory is. I don't know where they came from. I don't know what resources they have or don't have. I don't know what their whole story, their story is. And, you know, all of a sudden I realized that sort of lifted everything off my shoulders. That now that I don't judge people, I say, you know what? All right, you got tattoos all over you and you got pink hair. I would have judged you, but you know what? We did something together that we, you know, and from so totally different backgrounds and pulled together. And that's one of the greatest things that happened to me is becoming less judgmental of people and just saying, you know what, I'll be here for you. I will help you how I can. I may not agree with things, you know, that you've done, but you know what, we've got a common mission and let's just shelve everything else and focus on that. And that was a great metaphor for me, for my life.
And what I noticed, and of course I wasn't there, this is just me, you know, picking up off of videos and the news feeds at the time, that people were remarkably calm. I think there were one or two isolated incidents where people were a bit hysterical. I think you mentioned the lady with the baby. I think she kind of froze in place, if I'm not mistaken, and the elderly lady. But it appears to me, and I think it appeared to the world at large, that you guys just instantly went into, let's fix this thing. Let's do it.
Yeah, I get asked that a lot, and that's why I talk about the passenger makeup of the plane so much, because I think that had a tremendous amount to play with that. Because if you look at that path, and Captain Sullenberger sort of gave us that thought. We were actually, what I heard him talk about it was, we were in the green room, or heading to the green room at a CBS show we were on, and we talked about the passenger makeup, but I never thought about it, Denise, and Ken, I would never think about it. But all of a sudden when he mentioned that, and all of a sudden about 90% of those people were business people, and about 10% were people who don't travel much, all of a sudden you realize, you know, people who are business people usually can handle themselves.
Right.
So the different mindset, right? They're focusing on, okay, how am I going to get out of this thing? You know, and how am I going to do this to, you know, survive? So the variables were minimal. And you contrast that to another captain I spoke to. I shared this with him. He goes, he says, listen, I fly out of Orlando all the time. He goes, just think if that happened in Orlando, and if I could even do what Sullenberger did, if I could. Only I can, but if I could. It doesn't matter, because the passenger makeup of that plane coming out of Orlando is totally different, because who comes out to Orlando traditionally? It's families, kids,
tourists,
and maybe it's probably flipped. Probably 10% are business and 90% are recreational. So, and then I said, okay, well, let's look at an example. And then you look at the example of that movie Flight with Denzel Washington. it was flying from Orlando to Atlanta, and that's exactly what happened on, and as they showed in that movie, on that plane, where people freaked out. And so it's like that, I think that was the reason, one of the reasons it was so calm, but also the demeanor of Captain Sullenberger when he said, you know, this is your captain, brace for impact. It was matter of fact. It was like, okay, instead of him saying, well, it looks like we're going to go down, and by the way, we're hit by birds, and I don't know if I could do this, and I'll do it. And all of a sudden, he's talking too much. Tell people what they need to hear to be able to get them in the proper state to focus at that moment in time from the outcome. And that was, once again, a great example and a great lesson for business, for anybody. It's like, tell me what I need to know to be able to get the outcome. If I need more information, I'll ask. But this is what you need to get the outcome. And that's what leaders do, set the direction and set the focus. So another great lesson. And that's one of the reasons I think people were so calm on that plane. I won't say calm. I would say not hourly, you know, going, you know, getting freaking out, right. You know, say it that way.
Well, and I caught that at the top of the show when you mentioned the plane makeup. I went, well, there it is. And I knew instantly
yep.
what you were talking about.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I mean, and that makes tremendous sense to me.
Yeah, it's you think back and logically, it makes so much sense now. And so I tell people when they get on the plane, I coach them, I said, hey, pay attention to the flight crew because every door is different, every extra second. Just check quickly around you about who's around you. What kind of people are around you? You know, are they recreational? Are they business people? And you'll sort of get an inkling if something does happen, that, you know, sort of how you need to respond or handle it. And I had that example. I flew to Panama last year, and they had two people who couldn't speak English on the extra rows. And, you know, I was like freaking out a little bit. I'm like, you know, so I realized, I was aware at that point that you had to have somebody who could communicate with the flight attendants in English, right? That to be able to do it. And they had them removed, and that was probably the right thing to do. But I'm aware on the plane now, and I think everybody needs to be aware of what's going on, especially if they're in a, you know, in a plane, ferry, bus, train, wherever they're at, so they sort of can understand how it's all made up. In a car, you're right.
Car. I mean, you said earlier you don't know if the person coming at you is going to veer into
right.
your lane. Look, when I'm driving a car, I am very aware. I don't have my radio on. My cell phone is in my bag. I will not answer it. I will not text. And I'm watching everybody.
Yep.
I'm not worried
yep.
about my driving. I'm concerned about theirs. And I'm very, very aware of what's going on around me. I'm checking my mirrors. I'm looking at the idiot next to me who's putting on her
yep.
mascara and eating a cheeseburger at the same time. Driving with her knee, I get very quickly away from her. But,
yeah. Yeah.
And I, you know, when I say idiot, I mean exactly that. That's just foolish behavior, and it's going to cause some damage. But yeah, I'm aware when I'm walking, when I'm in a grocery store, I want to know who's around me.
Right.
You know, I'm constantly scanning to see, is there anything I need to be concerned about? Can I help anybody? There's always somebody in a grocery store that needs help.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fairly tall, I can reach. You know, there's just, I'm always aware. You have to be.
Well, if you look in the Bible, if you want to take a spiritual or reference to this, is when Jesus was with the disciples and it was about his time to go, and he said, stay awake, right? Stay awake. Be aware of what's going on. He wanted people to be aware of what was going on, not only of what's going to happen to him, but, you know, what could potentially happen to them. And that was, you know, that's straight from the Bible. So if you look at it from that perspective, you're exactly right. Awareness is one of the biggest things that, not only from a spiritual perspective, from a practical perspective. And I try to tell my kids all the time that. And that's why I use the metaphor, Denise, of the car coming down the road. Like, how can you trust somebody you don't even know like that going 70 miles an hour? How can you? But you have to. But you have to be aware. See,
right.
God gives you choices, right? He puts it out there, but you have to make the right choice.
That's exactly right. And listen, what concerns me a great deal about today's society is honestly the lack of awareness, and I'm going to attribute that to cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
you see people,
a big contributor,
stepping out
yep.
in front of cars. I mean, they're look. When I drive into Walmart or Albertsons or wherever it is, and I'm going for groceries, I'm looking out for the people who are coming out those doors because you know what? They're on their cell phones more often than not, and they're going to step right out into that thing because, yeah, we're supposed to yield for them. That doesn't always happen. But it's just so dangerous, and, you know, I'll see kids walking down the street, and I had a big conversation with Larry Wingate on my radio show one day. He was talking about, you know, why our kids are kind of fat, sick, and, you know, just not healthy these days. And, you know, argue, you don't argue with Larry Winget, but I did it. And he said, no, Denise, I know that you're not around kids a whole lot, but I want you to pay attention. So this is kind of, talks about what we're talking about, awareness. And I live in a very small neighborhood, Dave. It's three streets deep, three streets wide, very quiet. There's sugar cane fields that I can see on one side, and sugar canes on the other side. There used to be sugar cane fields behind me. That's now a development. But it's very quiet. And, I walk down to my mailbox one day, and I see the school bus coming in, and these three teenage kids get off. And I thought, I could hear Larry's voice in my head going, I'm telling you, we're not raising a healthy generation. I said, okay. So these three kids get off, and Dave, they did not look healthy. They were slovenly. The girl had kind of dank, greasy-looking hair. They're walking abreast in the street because, fortunately, we're a small enough neighborhood. We don't have sidewalks and street stripes and all that. It's a quiet neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So they're walking abreast of each other, not speaking to each other at all. Their thumbs were working like crazy. But they're just walking down the road. So I leaned against my mailbox to see if they would see me or pay attention to me. They did not. They walked right past me. I could have reached out and toppled them like dominoes. They didn't even see me. And they did not look healthy. They didn't. They didn't have a bounce in their step. They didn't jump off of that school bus like, oh, we're home. Woohoo.
Right. Yep.
Dave, I worry about these kids. I really do.
Yeah, this generation is totally brought up totally different than you and I have been brought up. And Kaylee, you're right. It's the lack of awareness.
It's scary.
It is scary. And Kaylee, the lack of anticipation. There's a lot of reasons behind it, but I agree. I think I see this in my daughters. When they date by way of text message. I mean, I don't understand this. I don't understand. But I'm learning. There's a book called The Fourth Turning that Canley predicted this, and I read this back in the early '90s, and I sort of looked at it again a couple of years ago because it basically predicts, it gives you some perspective on everybody's life goes through four seasons continuously, and you might be in the winter season where everything's down, you're not making any money, your relationships are in a poor situation, your business is not doing well, but spring's coming, right? And if you do like spring's coming, but all of a sudden it predicts even generations going back on, like my generation where I grew up, dates back to my great-grandfather back in the late 1800s, and that's when the economy was coming back, and that's when, if you remember the 90s and all that, it was coming back. And this generation has never experienced a world war, never experienced a depression. And I talked to my dad before he passed away, Denise, and about back in 2009 when all this was happening, and I was all over the place, and I was talking about the kids. And I was like, I'm really worried about the kids. He said, you know what? I lived in the Depression, and we got through it. He said, people in my generation don't worry about this because we've done it before. He said, your kids have never done it before. They have no reference point except just going back and reading about it. And that's what makes the difference. Every generation has a different reference point, and my reference point's the Vietnam War in that era, where you got to visualize war, and you got to feel things, you got to see all these things going on, but you saw how people handle it. These kids have never even seen how people handle it, and they're getting bad, all these bad or different references. So how is this going to go? So you're right. I think the lack of awareness and preparation is going to be very intriguing and potentially challenging for this next generation coming up if they don't get focused.
I agree, and I think that's a very important word, is focus. And
just
now that I'm aware of it, and I'm not judging them, I'm watching them, I'm observing. Because, before I'd be out and about, and I'm an introvert, I'm not out and about much. But when I am, I'm a people watcher. I like to see what people are doing and, how they're reacting. And I must look friendlier than I actually am because people just want to talk to me when I'm in the grocery store. I don't know why.
And I'm sure you have that, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure you very.
I have. No, I'm not. I'm not friendly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want that reputation. But anyway, I'm getting these conversations with really neat people. I got in a conversation the other day with a lady that she's probably in her 80s. She was so cute. She was dressed up beautifully. Her toenails were painted pink. She had cute sandals on. I was like, I like your sandals. And we talked for an hour. And she told me some stories about the area that I didn't know because she's been here all of her life. Fascinating. But because I'm aware of these people, I get to, you know, choose who I want to speak with or don't want to speak with. And it's really, it's an interesting thing. And that's just, we got off course there, but I wanted to share that with you. So what I want to ask you really is, are you going to have any kind of online course where people can learn these things from you? Because these can be taught, can't they?
Oh, most definitely. And yes, thank you for asking. Yes, we are developing an online program. I've been very, very fortunate. I'm working with an organization out of Chicago who is called Hoopus, and they primarily focus on the financial services industry. But I'm working with them now and taking some of their thought processes and some of their strategies on being able to put an online course together around these 12 resources. Yes, we're putting that together. Plus, I'm really excited about my next book. It's called Moments Matter, that we're working on it. Within the next about 30 days, we're going to have the e-book out, and the next about 60 to 90 days, we'll have the physical copy. But it's going to be about these 12 resources and how, not some of the things I share with you today, but a lot more detail. But it's really going to center around where, you know, I talk about more moments matter. And where I'll put a perspective on that, and I share about this when I speak, is that, you know, I tell these kids, just think of Captain Sullenberger when he attended the Air Force Academy. Just think, when he attended that academy back in the early or mid-60s, if he didn't learn how to glide a plane, me and 154 other people and possibly the George Washington Bridge aren't here today. If my mom and dad back in the 60s didn't make me learn how to swim, I'm not here today, because everything you do in your life, everything you learn in your life matters. And it's all these moments that you don't think will ever add up. And I've heard kids, I've got kids, Denise, and you've probably seen around some of these kids, and sometimes these kids are said, you need to go learn this, you need to be able to do this. And I remember once my eldest daughter said, Dad, why are you making me do this? I'm never going to use this. This is a waste of my time. You know, and that was the mindset. I told her, Chelsea, just listen. I said, just think, you know, if you don't learn this now, maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 years, it may not mean anything, but maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you may have to use that skill. I had to. If I didn't know how to swim, you wouldn't have a dad today. You wouldn't have a dad today, because I had to get off that plane, and my pathway was swimming, and my mom and dad made me learn how to swim. And so it's all these skills and things you learn that you don't ever think you're going to have to use. One day you're going to have to use it. Everybody on that plane had to use a different skill set. Everybody did. Whether it was gliding, whether it's power of focus, whether it was swimming, whether it's leading, whatever it was, they had to use a different skill set to get them through that day. You know, I talked to somebody who, about 4 or 5 years ago, I spoke in Florence, South Carolina, with another gentleman who's on the plane. And he told his story first, and I was listening to his story, like, wow, okay, cool. But he was one of the first people off the plane. And I'm thinking, okay, what must have been his strategy? And he told me later, he said, listen, I heard someone said go, I went. And someone said, get out the door, I went. He said, the skill I had to use, man, I just had to get listen and go. I said, okay, for him to survive that day, his strategy was he had to be able to take direction and execute on it.
Right.
And I said, okay, everybody had a different skill. So, you know, I don't blame him for being one of the first people off. He did exactly what he was told, and he survived, and he went home. And,
somebody,
you know, later that
start the process.
Right.
Going, because if somebody, that first person is actually showing the path for other people to get out, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
They set up the pathway, and then you, like I said, I think God gives everybody the power, and the biggest thing God gives everybody is the power of choice. The power of choice to choose. And my family gets tired of me saying that, but I said, you chose to do that. It's like, I didn't tell you, I didn't put a gun to your head. You chose to do that, so now there's either positive or negative consequences to every choice that you make.
Right.
So, you know, and everything in life's a choice. You choose to be happy or sad. You choose to be financially, you know, okay or in debt. And I'm in debt. You know, I got debt. Everybody's got something, right? But I've chosen that, so now I've got to get a strategy to get out of that. But everybody chooses in life everything, and whether what they eat, what they don't eat, like we were talking about those kids earlier, what they eat, they might not eat. It's everything's in choice, and it's consequences. And I think I've drilled that in my kids' heads so much they get tired of hearing it. But now at least they understand it. So when they make a choice, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people don't understand consequences. They don't think ahead enough. Listen, we've only got about 45 seconds.
Yep.
We're going to stop streaming in 45 seconds, but we'll still be recording. Can you stay with me for about another 5 minutes?
I can.
Okay, because I've got some more questions for you. I've got
okay.
a ton of them.
Okay.
Actually, when your book comes out, would you please come back?
Most definitely. Thank you.
Okay, great. Listen, you said something, I think, a couple of times, and I keep wanting to ask you about it. And this is about leadership. And you said people who lead, and then there were some people who had to step back from leading.
Right.
I find that really intriguing. Can you give me a couple of examples?
I sure can. And I use sort of the metaphor, the example of checking your ego at the door. And I'll use an example from the plane of that day, where I don't talk about it a lot because it doesn't come up. There's a lady who was on the left side of the plane, actually went back in the plane to get her luggage. And
you're kidding me.
No, I'm not. And Captain Sullenberger actually writes about this in his book, about one of the biggest lessons you learn in the plane crash is once you're off the plane, don't go back in the sinking plane. But once again, you don't judge people because you don't know their backstory. You don't know what they value in life,
well,
right?
And, of course, you don't know what her mindset was.
Right.
It may have just been a knee-jerk response.
And I tell people.
I'm sure we're in shock.
Yeah, and I think I tell people, just joking, I say she must have gold in her purse, right? I mean, she must have some in that purse that she needed. It wasn't that important that she valued that much. So when she came back on and I started yelling at her to get off the plane, and we got her out to the right side of the plane, I think at that point there was another guy who was actually sort of looking back in at this. He stepped back and let me take a leadership role. You know, because like I mentioned earlier and we were talking, is one thing I learned from Tony years ago, that whoever has the most certainty in that moment is all of a sudden becomes a leader. At that moment, I had certainty that, okay, let's get off the plane. And she paid it. I mean, all of a sudden, I got her attention. She paid attention, and she dropped her luggage when she got on the plane because when she took her first step, it was jet fuel and icy wing. So it was even a little bit more comical that she actually lost pretty much everything she went after. And that's a great metaphor, right? Sometimes you have to let go. But that was a great example that, you know, I had the certainty in that moment. And everybody else, he may have been a leader or not a leader, but he stepped back and let me handle the situation because I had the certainty. So I think that's when sometimes the leaders are the ones with the most certainty, give that direction, give that vision, and that's when people, other leaders, they say, you know what, that person has got it under control. He or she have got it in command. Let me step back and fall in line or go a different pathway to another direction. I think that happened on that plane a lot on that plane that day.
And I kept wondering when you were speaking about that, like, how did you identify that people were doing that? But that, I mean, that's a good story because,
yep.
I mean, a lot of leaders just, I've seen leaders who just don't stop leading. And they're rare.
Yep.
They're really rare because a true leader is going to say, okay, this is really not my skill set. You step up. I'm going to let
right.
you step up. So I really love that story.
Yeah, I think the most successful sales teams I've ever been on, in fact, I learned this actually when I was in a hotel restaurant with Marriott. I had a manager. He's a general manager. He'd been doing it for 20 years. He had thousands percent more skill sets than I had. I had tactical skill sets of how to do all these things around a hotel and restaurant. But he had this strategy on why it's important. But I remember once we were in the restaurant, and I was the restaurant manager. He was a gentleman. He was my boss. But there was something that happened in the restaurant where I had to deal with it. And he could have simply stepped in, handled it, and it would have been done. But he stepped back and said, okay, I'm going to let him handle it and see how he handles it. And I handled it correctly. But I got, that was one of the biggest, earliest lessons in my business career of seeing somebody who had 20, 25 years of experience on me who could have handled that in 5 seconds. And it took me an hour, but it was a learning experience for me in leadership on how to sometimes step back and actually then step up to handle something. It could have been a situation that the company would have been in a dire situation, not dire, but a challenging situation in.
And again, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned Tony multiple
yep.
times. He encouraged you to go out on your own, didn't he? And to build your business and write your book. And I mean,
most definitely.
I mean, you've got the greatest mentor in the world. I'm so jealous.
Well, he started this back probably in, I would say, about 1997, 98. And I was, at that point, his assistant security director. So I was really more in charge of the in-room team, the people who were basically on the team, where that is security, was more in charge of putting the whole program together, right? So I was tactical at that point, operations. But when I was with him, he would always, I see him, the first time I ever seen every event that I was with him, he'd say, "Have you got your own company yet? Are you doing your own thing yet?" Because he knew I wasn't working for a company. I kept always answering no. You know, you need to work for yourself. You can't work for the man all the time. You're always contributing to somebody else. Do it for yourself.
And
do it for yourself. That's right. So
I love that.
So, you know, all of a sudden this happens. And the only person, Denise, that called me that night in the hospital was Tony Robbins. My company didn't call me. No one else called me. But I tell people, just think, this guy is busier than everybody. And he all of a sudden tracked me down and found me at 11 o'clock at night in a hospital where my other people couldn't even take the time to even figure out where I was at. And we had a very emotional conversation that night. But then he said, you know, call me back, you know, when you get out and we can talk through this. And I talked to him about this. And right before I was flying, in fact, I flew to L.A. As soon as I landed in Los Angeles, I was doing all these TV shows. And I was at the hotel, and he said, call me when you get to L.A., because he was in Palm Springs. He said, I'll be happy to answer anything you have. So I started asking a question about the media and this, what should I expect? And he said, this is your opportune time. He said, if you don't take this opportunity now, you'll never take it. He said, you're in a situation where you've lived through something that very few people have lived through. You have your story. You have a way to impact people. If you don't do it now, you'll never do it. And I remember that. Now, it took me a couple of years to get it figured out. You know, I was making, you know, good money, and my wife always loves health insurance. So, you know, there was a lot of details. But once I got that figured out, I did it. And I told him that day, I said, I'm doing it right now. And I said, I'm going to be your next millionaire and this and that. And he said, just go for it. And he always encouraged me to do that, to be on myself and be an entrepreneur. And he never promised me to be easy. He never said that.
No.
Because he's gone through up and downs. But
right.
Once I made that decision, I knew that I was going forward. And the only way that I can lose, Denise, is to quit. That's the only way I can lose. I know you go through up and downs. Everybody's got their business challenges. You know, you take on a little debt when you go into company, and then you start getting it back and getting all these systems in place, which has been a big challenge or learning experience for me, which I'm getting through. But he was my great inspiration to do that. And my dad was the other one. And my dad, you know, had worked for a company for 30 years, and he and other people of that age got cut. And he was a part of the first age discrimination lawsuit in this country, and he won. Because they laid off everybody over 30 years of experience. And in that generation, if you think back, your parents are probably that generation who grew up in the Depression, who, you know, you stayed with the company for 100 years. I mean, you had loyalty, right? They were there for you. You were there for them. But, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, that changed. You know, in Canley,
it no longer exists.
And he didn't understand that.
Right.
And he told me, right after the plane crash, and I talked to him a little, you know, several months later, he goes, you know, don't trust anybody. He goes, that was his mindset, because he had to live it. He said, do it yourself. And, you know, and that's why he was one of my biggest encouragers. But Tony gave me the impetus to say, go, you got to do it. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing and figuring out things as we go. And that's one of the things I believe in is outsourcing, you know, the things that I don't do well at to other people who can, and do the things I do really well. And
right.
Getting myself around the right team. It's right, the right peer group. And that's why I'm so focused on the team that I did, because they have to understand my mission. And if they're aligned with my mission, then we're gonna do the right things. We're going to make impact. So I'm always focused on who's in my little world. And Tony taught me that too, because he only lets a few people around his little world. You know, he's got to have a trust level. And the one thing he taught me, he said the one thing he valued most is loyalty. And that's, I was always loyal. And I think that's one thing too. If you're loyal and with the team you have, you're going to go through bad, you go through good, but everybody's going to win or lose. And we're going to do it together, and we're going to figure it out. So that's a long-winded answer to the answer of how Tony inspired me to do what I'm doing.
Well, and you also gave me, you know, we're talking about teams and loyalties and how you create that. Listen, as a virtual assistant, I'm really an OBM, an online business manager and a web developer, and I handle about 30 people on my team. You're right. I mean, I have to depend on them. They have to depend on me. We have to be mission-centric, which I hadn't really framed it like that. But I keep seeing it floating in front of my eyes, mission-oriented, mission-oriented. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
This is a huge takeaway for me. I'm probably doing it, but really didn't know how to frame it. It's very important to have those people around you and to take advice. when it's time to take advice. I mean, if Tony Robbins tells you to do something, you kind of want to do it, I would think. But you want to be very aware of the opportunities when they kind of drop out of the sky into your lap, and you're doing that, and I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I think God gives everybody pathways, Denise. He's given you a pathway, he's given me a pathway, he gives everybody pathways, and the question goes back to what I said earlier is what choice are you going to make? You know, are you going to take it or don't take it? And my belief system says if you don't take it, then that pathway may never open up to you again. So I don't, you know, I always evaluate things, but Kaylee, you know, when something's given to you, an opportunity to inspire people, to impact people, to help other people's lives, and I think that's the change where my focus, and I tell people, my focus up to that point was really my dad's model. He made money for the family. He was gone a lot, but he was doing the right thing for the family. We never lacked. We had what we needed, you know, and so I was my role model of my global perspective of the world, right? This is how you do it. So I did it that way, and I had similar outcomes. But then again, I wasn't fulfilled or happy because all of a sudden I left things from my family I should have been at, and I wasn't contributing the way I was. So it's a flip that day to focusing on how do I contribute more and how do I grow more. And that's about really about helping my family and other people. And that one change in the Bible says it comes back to you tenfold. And as my mom said, if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. Maybe this is how this whole thing is supposed to come around, is if you do the right thing, things do come back to you in a way that you can serve. And if you focus on that, then all of a sudden your life is starting to become fulfilled.
And this is, I'm guessing, a daily thought process for you. I mean, these are lessons that you learned that you're putting into play on a daily basis. I mean, now that you've identified these really critically important 12 pillars, do you kind of evaluate them on a daily basis and say, okay, you know, I'm sliding a bit here, I'm strengthening here, what can I do?
Most definitely. I did do that, plus what Tony teaches and what I talk about, too, because I think it's probably the ultimate. It's around the six primary needs of people. And once you understand what those needs are, and also you can evaluate why people do what they do, and all of a sudden you can say, okay, this is why this person's doing what they're doing, and how can I communicate a modality? So putting everything together, and every day I put all these things together, every time I meet somebody is, what's that person's primary need at this point in time they're driving for? Is it empowering them, empowering me, not empowering them or me? And all of a sudden I can start evaluating and working towards or in a different direction.
Gotcha. I have learned so much from you today. I mean, I learned a lot from you during our pre-interview call. Today, I'm telling you, I have, you know, I work on a tight schedule and I've got a ton of stuff to do. I'm going to be honest with you, as soon as I walk off from this show, I'm going outside and I'm going to pick up my cat and I'm going to do a lot of thinking because really kind of stirred some things in my brain that they're not going away. Like I said, I keep seeing that phrase pop in front of my eyes. Yep. I need to go outside and concentrate on that. And I do better when I'm out of my office, away from my electronics. I need to go outside and kind of commune with nature and see what's percolating in my head.
Well, I'm glad that I had that kind of impact today, because that's my goal every day. Is my I say every day, how can I impact one more person and enjoy the process? And that last little phrase is the one thing that a lot of people don't do. They'll do whatever, they'll do this, but they don't enjoy the process. And so I'm glad I've fulfilled my mission then today of impacting you and hopefully a few other people who've been listening to us, you know, talk for the last hour plus, and hopefully they'll start thinking about some of the things they're doing. And And even if they're going through a life, I just met yesterday, last night, I left work early and went up and met with a young lady whose mother just passed away of breast cancer. And that's her focus now. And we had a conversation how I could help her and impact her. And I think she just driving up there to be with her at her thing meant a lot because, you know, to her right now, she's got a different mission. And she can learn from me some of the things around some of these strategies, and hopefully she can help other families use that are going through the same thing she just went through. So, you know, you never know who you're going to touch. You never know.
You absolutely do not. Dave, we're 14 minutes over. Thank you for staying with me. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you on the web?
Yep. Well, thank you. So if they go to my website, DaveSandersonSpeaks.com, I have employed a little button there called Let's Talk. And if they hit on Let's Talk, and they fill out a couple pieces of information, that will come to me directly, and I will get back with them directly, whether it's by email, by text, or by voice. So that's the best way to communicate. But, you know, right now I do a lot of communication on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook is Dave Sanderson Speaks, and my Twitter is Dave Sanderson too. And I monitor that, and unfortunately I do probably more of that monitoring than I need to do, but I interact with so many more people that way that this is an amazing tool. So those are really the primary ways. LinkedIn I use for my business side for people that's under David Sanderson. So those are the best ways to get in touch with me. And like I mentioned, I'm just excited about this new book called Moments Matter. And what I'm going to do for you and your listeners, Denise, is I'm going to put together a webinar. It's around all the talk about mission-focused leadership and these key points that we didn't get a chance to dig into around leadership today. And I'll send you that link for your to send out to your listeners, and they can listen in and hear in detail about some of these key distinctions we didn't get a chance to talk about today. And I'll send that to you. That's my gift to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That is wonderful. I can't wait to hear it.
Well, thank you. I hope it's as good as it's supposed to be. But thank you.
Trust me, it is. Well, David, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with me here today. It has been an honor to have you as a guest today, and I consider you a friend. I know
Same
we
here.
Only just met, but we've had several conversations, and yeah, I'm kind of looking to you as a mentor, to be honest with you. I really appreciate you being here with me today. And
thank
I know
you.
The audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did, and they're going to learn a lot. This show is available. It will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Dave Sanderson, and I will see you next week. Dave, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And remember that moments always matter, Denise.
I do.
All right. Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.